it gave me a lot to chew on. I listened to it a lot at the time, and I think it sort of expanded my sort of sonic, the sort of sonic horizon. If it changed my playing, it gave me, I guess, just a wider range of sounds that it seemed acceptable to incorporate in my playing, and sort of like things that I would have regarded as glitches or, you know, really unpleasant sounds became more attractive and more suggested themselves as more useful.
This is Essential Tremors.
I'm Lee Gardner.
I'm Matt Byers. The idea behind this show is to have musicians and other creators talk about songs that shaped who they are. We're not looking for favorite songs, necessarily. We're also not looking for songs that they'd choose to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. What we're looking for are songs that have significance to them. Songs that might have changed the course of their creative lives, or their lives in general. Our guest for this episode is Owen Gardner of Baltimore band Horse Lords. Drawing on sources rarely referenced by indie rock bands or bands playing traditional rock instruments, Horse Lords' music, especially live, is mesmerizing. Over the course of 3 albums and numerous mixtapes, the quartet has continued to refine their complex polyrhythmic attack. Gardner, a native of Davenport, Iowa, first came to Baltimore to attend Goucher College. The first song Gardner chose as being highly influential to him was Consume Red by Ground Zero.
So the first song is Consume Red by Ground Zero from the album Consume Red. And this is a song I first heard, I was a teenager. I can't quite remember how old, but I'd read in the Sunday New York Times art section, I think used to be a lot stronger than it is now, because I learned about a lot of music from that. And at the time I was living in Eastern Iowa, and I didn't actually have a lot of access to this sort of stuff, but I could sort of imagine all these like incredible things happening elsewhere in the world. And I read about Atomo Yoshihide and this sort of scene going on in Tokyo. And it was sort of the first time I became aware of noise music, which I didn't really understand that was something that was going on elsewhere in the world. I sort of thought of it as just a Japanese thing for quite a while. Anyway, at the time I had heard about it, so I was reading about that. It was very compelling to me, and I spent a long time trying to track down some of this music, and I couldn't find very much of it. But I was able to find this CD of Consume Red, and it was really not, I wouldn't exactly say I was unprepared for it, but it was not like anything I'd heard before. It starts off with this really long loop of this Korean shamanic musician whose name I can't remember right now. And then, yeah, what it builds to and how it builds to that, this I just found really compelling and really unusual. And just the harshness of the textures and the way it developed, so sort of develops intuitively, but not in a way I was accustomed to. So it was, I found that very attractive.
Were you already playing music at that point?
Yes, I was, but nothing like that. I wouldn't have really even had the tools at the time, I don't think. But yeah, I was already playing music, both playing in a very different direction, playing in like sort of, my dad plays like sort of old-time string band music, and I would play some of that. And then also I had like a rock band of my own. It gave me a lot to chew on. I listened to it a lot at the time, and I think it sort of expanded my sort of sonic, the sort of sonic horizon. If it changed my playing, it gave me, I guess, just a wider range of sounds that it seemed acceptable to incorporate in my playing, and sort of like things that I would have regarded as glitches or, you know, really unpleasant sounds became more attractive and more suggested themselves as more useful, as well as like silence and you know, there's a really wide range of sound on this. And then I, you know, sought out other recordings by some of these people, and I found some, and it's a really extreme sound world. So I don't know if it exactly changed my playing, but sort of what could what I saw as acceptable musical material definitely expanded a great deal.
Where did you get a copy of the Ground Zero CD in Dubuque, Iowa?
I think I ordered it from Moondog Music, which is where I got everything. I don't believe they had a copy in the store, but I did get some surprising stuff there. I don't know where it came from, but like I got my first Faust CD there, and a lot of my early exposure to Krautrock was just stuff I came upon there, which was really surprising. Because I don't think anybody else was listening to that sort of stuff.
The second song chosen by Gardner was Nathan Fraser and Frank Patterson's Old Cow Died.
This was a song I also heard as a teenager under very different circumstances. This was something my dad played for me at some point, and he was an old-time musician, and I was getting interested in that myself after sort of being a kid, thinking it was just the lamest, you know, it was the music like my parents were into, and I couldn't imagine anything less cool. But something at some point changed my mind, and I started finding that I was really interested in it. And I started playing the banjo, but I hadn't heard, and not a lot of people do ever hear, this sort of repertoire, which is, I think by the time it was recorded, sometime in the 40s, it was quite old fashioned, and it was being made by black musicians who were at that point very few. There was sort of one of the last generations of black string band musicians. So I guess hearing the sort of source of the music that I was listening to, sort of old time, especially banjo repertoire, it was really interesting to hear sort of the roots of that, but roots that sort of suggested a very different, just a very different set of techniques for one thing, and just sort of a different approach in many ways, very different rhythmic vocabulary, kind of a different approach altogether. Even though that had been, this was the genesis of the music I was more familiar with, which is a lot more straightforward and sort of, as a player, it's much more predictable. And although it's very driving, doesn't have the sort of rhythmic variety with this stuff. So I was very, very drawn to it very immediately. And unfortunately, there's not a whole lot else out there. There's some field recordings and archival recordings. I'm not sure there are any commercial recordings of this sort of stuff. But yeah, I've listened to as much as I could. And I don't think it had any immediate impact on my playing, but certainly long term, it allowed me to draw a lot of connections and sort of hear the Africanisms in the playing and sort of be able to connect those to other musics I was interested in and became more interested in later and more familiar with.
I'm interested by the idea that this is music that you grew up hearing, or you grew up hearing music very much like this. Mm-hmm. But when you heard this, it stood out as different mm-hmm. for you. And I don't know that a lot of people, lay people, I guess, would hear the same things. What do you hear that's different when you hear this as opposed to the music you were more familiar with, the string band music?
I guess maybe it would be maybe it would be hard to appreciate if you didn't play the banjo. I think some of it would not. I was mostly listening to the banjo player for one thing. So it might be details too specific to the banjo to be maybe of a lot of interest to a wider audience. But yeah, just the sort of rhythmic, the rhythmic variety and the complexity really stood out to me, as opposed to, you know, banjo music is, I think, unfairly derided for its sort of monotony. And that's, again, that's unfair. That's there's a lot going on there, but there's not as much going on as we hear in this. And just he's constantly varying what he's playing, you know, it's really, really virtuosic in a way that I had never heard before, in a much more interesting way than a lot of virtuosic banjo music is. Yeah, I don't know. The notes are weird. It's just everything's a little off, but in a way that was clearly fully realized and suggested this a sort of another world of, maybe not another world, but another way of doing things. You know, I remained as interested in the sort of white banjo style and repertoire, but it sort of opened up. I mean, for one thing, it's sort of a different part of the history that's sort of obscured. I think obscured in part just from the lack of the lack of documentation. Maybe it just makes historians not terribly interested in it, because there's not a lot to go on. But also because I think it just makes the things get so much messier if you have, I don't know, if you have to deal with how white and black people in America have interacted with each other. That's a lot of uncomfortable, or an entirely uncomfortable history. But yeah, I think the music itself has a lot going for it. And to me, it sounds very unique to me anyway. And maybe it would take a little more immersion into sort of old-time banjo music, especially as opposed to bluegrass banjo, which is a very different matter. So it might take a little more immersion to appreciate some of the difference, but I think that immersion would be worthwhile.
Do you still play banjo?
I do, sort of, just on a hobby basis mostly. I mean, I'm still interested in it. I still try to like learn things. I try to learn tunes, but it mostly just gets transmuted into guitar. Although the technique is very different, there's a lot. Definitely a lot of my guitar playing comes out of, although the technique is a little different, there's a lot of overlap, and I use a lot of sort of cliches that a banjo player would use that a guitar player would not. And the tuning I use is pretty similar, comes from a particular banjo tuning. So I think about it a lot, but I don't play it as much, not as much as I'd like to, and not as much as anyone hoping to be an actual practicing banjo player would.
The final song chosen by Gardner as being crucial to his development as a musician was Wezen by Mauritanian musicians Kweli Ould Said and Kleid Ould Melid.
Called Wallahi Lazane, and I was a little dishonest about this one in that this track is sort of a result of an earlier period of listening to stuff that I would not be able to furnish you with, because it was all just private recordings that were not, I wouldn't have access to now, and I would not be able to share with anybody. But this, let's see, I'm trying to work backwards here. This compilation was made by a guy named Matthew Lavoie, who lived in Silver Spring, and I had heard of him through his work with Voice of America. This is around 2008, I believe, or 2007, 2008, when I was 22 or 23, depending on which year it was. And yeah, he had written about Mauritanian music on his blog through the Voice of America radio show, Music Time in Africa, which he was working on. And I contacted him because I was interested in doing some sort of academic work about Mauritanian music at the time. So I spent a long time. I would go down to Silver Spring and we would just listen. He had a closet full of tapes of Mauritanian music, and especially guitar music. And we would just listen for hours and really just get inside of this, that sort of sound world. And at the time I was hardly playing guitar at all at the time. I was having sort of crisis with the guitar itself. I think just, it struck me as sort of inadequate to what I wanted to do with microtonality and things like this. And hearing this music was sort of, extraordinary, I think, in its own right. But as a guitarist especially, it sort of gave me a certain kind of permission to... it brought a lot of things together, I guess. Like, I feel like I can hear a lot of the sort of banjo techniques I was interested in this kind of playing, but it's sort of elaborated into... I mean, this is classical music of Mauritania, so it's elaborated into this very, very rich, sophisticated system played by these, you know, just like... and played by just the most virtuosic musicians I'd ever heard. But most importantly, they were playing on modified guitars because their system... their tonal system involves more notes than ours. And that was a sort of, as I said, that sort of, I felt like that gave me permission to do that myself, to modify my guitar. And that's then sort of suggested what I could do with it going forward. Yeah. So it sort of, to some extent, I guess, provided a solution to this sort of crisis I was having, as well as, again, just being a really immersing myself in the music like that was also really educational, just learning. It's kind of a different time sense, and it's a very different way of presenting music at all, but especially presenting this certain kind of material. It's really like hypnotic and almost like narcotic, but at the same time very exciting, and sort of, you know, these things are happening at unbelievable speed, but it adds up to being this sort of really just trippy I don't know, unique experience that I have some trouble describing.
It's interesting because hearing that track, it does not, I feel like I don't have to make too many leaps to hear where that came out and what Horse Lords does, or at least you're part of Horse Lords. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, certainly. It was very, very influential, and I'm still, you know, the playing is beyond me for the most part, but I've picked up what I could, and I feel like certain aspects of it I've been able to pick up, but I'm still, I think it will probably be the rest of my life trying to learn to actually like play any of this stuff, you know, with any accuracy. You have a guitar which just it works the way it does, it is what it is, and you run into these limitations, and you know, you try to do what you can with them, and it's interesting to deal with them. But I guess this was the first time I saw people who were like, you know, mutilating guitars and remaking them in order to do what they needed to do, which in this case, you know, it's like a 1,000-year-old tradition. Like, it's like they have an idea of how music works and the guitar doesn't fit it. So they make the guitar bend to them. And so, yeah, and that sort of said to me that I could do the same thing. It's like I don't, the sort of morphology of the guitar doesn't make sense to me, so I need to bend it, you know, bend it to my will. And so yeah, it was a very meaningful encounter with that music.
Could you explain a little bit about how your guitar is different than, you know, when you could buy a Guitar Center? Because I don't think I've heard that discussed or written about much.
Well, so a conventional guitar has 12 frets to the octave, meaning it can basically play 12 notes, and they're evenly spaced. The frets may not appear evenly spaced, but sort of in terms of pitch space, they are equally spaced. So anytime, you know, any adjacent frets will be playing the same interval as any other set of adjacent frets. And I had started working with a system called Just Intonation that people could be familiar with from maybe the work of Wilmot Young or Harry Partch, where the intervals are based on whole number ratios between notes. So the interval sizes are variable, and they're related in this precise way that I feel like gives one a lot of, again, you get a large variety of intervals, but you also, they have sort of timbral implications that they wouldn't on a conventional guitar, you know, and you have, you know, whereas on a normal guitar, you'd basically have the option of playing like a major chord or a minor chord. In this case, you have basically limitless decisions about what sort of qualities, even in that range, you know, there are different sort of degrees of majorness or minorness And then, you know, there are neutral intervals that are exploited a lot in Mauritanian music between those intervals that are neither major nor minor. And you can get into a lot of sort of unfamiliar territory that's I find very exciting. And yeah, it just sort of opens up sort of new avenues for exploration. And, you know, it has a lot of implications for like timbre and melody and harmony. They're all sort of changed. And even rhythm is, you know, you can apply this sort of thinking to rhythm as people like Conlon Nancarrow had and come up with, you know, sounds you've never heard before. And it's a, I don't know, it's a sound I find very intriguing, very, has a lot of entrancing potential.
Essential Tremors is hosted and distributed by AudioStack and WYPR Baltimore. Look for and subscribe to our podcast at wypr.org/podcastcentral, including Life in the Balance, a monthly program that asks, what are the systemic issues in Baltimore that keep marginalized people from reaching their full potential? And what are the solutions to those problems? Also new to WYPR is The Noir and Bizarre, which explores the dark and strange stories we tell ourselves about human existence. Occult history, ghosts, haunted houses, and secret crimes, with a special emphasis on stories that draw on the rich history and culture of Baltimore. For more information about Essential Tremors or to connect with us, go to essentialpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.